Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The Cherokee Syllabary survived the Trail of Tears, initial skepticism by tribal citizens, and multiple changes in technology. Today, you can download a version on your iPhone. This year, the Cherokee Nation is marking 200 years since the launch of its written language created by the prominent Cherokee, Sequoia. We'll talk with the Cherokee Principal Chief and others about the importance of the syllabary right after the news. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders of the Hopi tribe in northern Arizona have extended a lockdown order for residents amid a continued surge in new COVID-19 cases. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports the tribe has one of the highest rates of new infections in the country.
Hopi officials say they've confirmed more than 100 new known COVID cases in the past 2 weeks. It continues a sustained spike that began in the fall. In all, nearly 1,200 members of the 9,000-person tribe have tested positive since the pandemic began. One worrying number for Hopi health officials is the tribe's percentage of positive tests, a key indicator for virus spread, which is more than 25%. That's over three times the national figure and higher than Arizona's statewide percentage. This week, the tribe extended its reservation-wide lockdown order until March 1st. It requires masks to be worn at all times in public and puts nightly and weekend curfews in place. Residents are also prohibited from gathering with people outside their households, along with several other restrictions. According to the order, those who violate it face criminal penalties. Most of the tribe's 12 villages have closed access to non-residents during the pandemic. Officials say travel between villages and off the reservation continued to be a primary driver of new COVID infections. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
A nonprofit advocating for the protection of a sacred site in Arizona went to court Wednesday to try and stop a proposed copper mine. Emma Gibson with Arizona Public Media has more.
Over the course of the preliminary injunction hearing, the nonprofit Apache Stronghold talked about the religious and cultural importance of Oak Flat, the site Resolution Copper wants to mine. Nolan Pike, a member of the group and of the San Carlos Apache tribe, testified at the hearing.
It saddens me to the fact that I had to go and get questioned about my religion, about my way of life, and how it is to pray and what it means, and to try to convey that message to the judge so that he can make the right decision.
Apache Stronghold also claims the land was to remain in Apache ownership, according to a treaty signed in 1852. The judge says he will decide whether or not to issue a preliminary injunction, temporarily stopping any progress on the mine by next Friday. For National Native News, I'm Emma Gibson.
The leader of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is weighing in on a challenge to a Freedmen descendants' run for tribal office. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. in a statement Wednesday said the challenge is offensive. Hoskin says Freedmen descendants are equal and full citizens under the law, including the right to seek public office. An eligibility complaint was filed this week after Cherokee Freedmen descendant Marilyn Van filed for candidacy for tribal council. The Cherokee Phoenix reports the complaint by Cherokee citizen Robin May states Van is not Cherokee by blood as required by the Constitution. There have been long-fought political and legal challenges over the status of freedmen, descendants of former Cherokee-owned slaves. Freedmen were granted rights of Cherokees through treaty in the 1800s. In 2017, courts ruled they are full Cherokee citizens under the law. The complaint has been sent to the Election Commission's attorney. Van told the Tulsa World she would fight in court if necessary. The general election is scheduled for June. Flags on the Navajo Nation are at half-staff in honor of former President Albert Hill, who passed away this week at age 70 after complications from COVID-19. He was Navajo Nation president in the 90s and later served in the Arizona legislature and was a member of the Navajo Nation Bar Association and the New Mexico Bar Association. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Utah Dene Bakea working to restore Bears Ears National Monument to 1.9 million acres with co-management by tribes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing scholarships to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Applications for the upcoming school year accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwitdui via Skype. This year, the Cherokee Nation is celebrating the 200th anniversary of the Cherokee syllabary. The Cherokee language is as old as time, but the written form of the language was developed by Sequoyah, a Cherokee from Tennessee who spent a good portion of his life developing and promoting the written language. Today, we'll learn about his efforts to develop the syllabary, the challenges he faced, including suspicion of witchcraft by his own people, and how the syllabary lives on in modern technology. But first, we're going to talk with Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin. The nation is honoring Sequoyah's development of the written language the entire year. They're organizing multiple events, including opening a new immersion school and language hub by the end of this year. Principal Chief Hoskin, welcome to Native America Calling.
Wonderful to be with you.
And, you know, it is a celebration of many sorts, just seeing how the language is living through some of these symbols and allowing more speakers to understand who they are, where they came from, and the importance of language. And for you, when were you first introduced to the syllabary?
Well, I think it was certainly in high school, opportunities locally at school and from my father to sort of point to what at the time seemed like, you know, symbols that I'd never seen before, because they were in college. I took some Cherokee classes, and that's when I first saw the name Durbin Feely, the great champion of our language, who passed away this last summer. And from there, I started to gain a deeper appreciation of what that meant. And certainly it was years later before it really sunk in what a revolution Sequoyah sparked, a revolution of thought among the Cherokee people. And it's certainly something worthy of celebration here in 2021.
And I think something that is really exciting is how far this dates back. The entire year, there is a celebration of the syllabary. Tell me a little bit about some of those celebrations.
Well, we have a wonderful array of museums and historic sites, and we're going to take some opportunities at those facilities to highlight the language and to celebrate with our citizens and the general public. Our museums are run very safely. This year is happening in the midst of the COVID pandemic, so they are safe places to go with the protocols we have in place, but we'll also have some virtual events so people can interact really, here locally and all over the world. What I hope people come away from this celebration is that they get this deeper understanding of how powerful it is to have a written language and how powerful it was for Cherokees in the 19th century. And then I think more important than all that, how relevant the language can be today and must be today if we're going to save it. So I think those events will help educate the public in that regard and inspire our people. We'll have some other things, some commemorative items. Certainly this is the year of Sequoyah, and we're going to celebrate it across the reservation and virtually all year.
And with that, I also understand there is an immersion school that's going to be starting. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the immersion school has been in place actually for some time, but the exciting thing is that last year I proposed and the council unanimously passed the Durban Feeling Language Preservation Act. Durban Feeling, the greatest advocate for Cherokee language preservation, and a person who did more for the Cherokee language really since Sequoyah. He passed away in the summer of 2020, but he made a great impact. So that legislation injected $16 million into our language programs. And so with respect to the immersion school, we're taking what's been a small school and increasing the number of students that we can reach, but also dedicating a new building for the students to learn in. And of course, you know, education professionals will tell you that the physical space where children learn is as important as the substance that they're learning. And so we hope to create an environment that that really does service to these kids and their families who want to learn the language, because they really are the key to saving it. But more broadly, this facility will house one of the most promising programs that we have, which is what we call the Adult Immersion Program, which is a Master Apprentice Language Program. Adults with the aptitude and the interest in the language can essentially be paid for 2 years to learn the language and get on the way to fluency. That will also happen in this facility, and our translation department will be in this facility. So what we envision is a physical space where people can learn the language, but all these departments that had been separated over the years just by, you know, putting programs here or there where we had space will all be together. I think there'll be a great deal of synergy that's yielded from this collaboration or this arrangement, and including collaboration. And so I think this is just a new era for Cherokee Nation language, and we'll get all that completed this year.
And this year has definitely been a heavy one, including the loss of many of our elders, including for COVID and other reasons. And with them often goes the language. And anything you want to share about, you know, thinking about these libraries, as many people have called them, our elders, the knowledge they hold, especially for the language. Any thoughts on, you know, spending time with them, gaining their knowledge, and respecting everything that they brought when they walk on? Any thoughts?
Well, that's certainly something that is a part of Cherokee culture, and I think part of the culture of tribes across the continent. But this past year has reminded us all how precious our elders are, and that we have to undertake efforts, redouble our efforts to protect our elders and to help say things like our language. Because this past year, COVID alone took 35 fluent speakers. We're a large tribe, largest in the country, 385,000 citizens. We only have 2,000 fluent speakers left. 35 of them were taken by COVID. That's 35 men and women who carry something very special in their hearts and in their minds that most of the rest of us don't. And we are depending on them to pass that on. But I think what happens is we start to realize it's the burden is on us to help them pass it on. So that inspired us to do things like protect the elders, making sure they had food during the shutdowns related to COVID, make sure that they're at the front of the line, those fluent Cherokee speakers, when it came to the vaccine, which is an ongoing effort. And so I think this past year, as difficult as it's been, has caused tribal leaders, the Cherokee Nation, and citizens, everyday citizens, to sort of reflect on what you said, that these elders are the people, the libraries, as you say, they're the possessors of our lifeways, our stories, our culture, and our language, and we have to protect them, and we have to make sure that that what they know is passed on. So that is what I think is coming out of this horrible pandemic.
Indeed. And lots of thoughts go out to all of those and everybody. We're in this together and we're feeling these things. And this has also been a strengthening of culture for many people. And we've heard that on the program, that they have used this time to maybe get closer with the language. And you're hearing a little bit from the Cherokee Nation. We're going to learn more about just where this syllabary came from, how far it has taken this tribal nation. But you are also welcome to join us too. And maybe your nation has also taken similar measures to pass on the language in a written form. If you want to share some thoughts with us, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Chief Huskin, thinking about the power that the written language holds just across the world, and then you think that the written language also includes a Cherokee nation made by Cherokees, and you think of the importance and the wealth that it has brought, and I think something that I think of is the representation, and thinking back how far this syllabary goes. This was a time when Native people were regarded in very bad ways, and we were seen as savages and so many different derogatory forms, words, and what have you. But yet here was this syllabary that was right there, running alongside the English language and bringing it to another level that, you know, was going against what people thought of Native people, that we were undereducated, we didn't have knowledge, you know, and misunderstandings led to a lot of things. For you, knowing that this strong representation was right there, almost going toe-to-toe with misconceptions, what are your thoughts on that, of this being present in a time where people thought so little of Native people?
Well, it fills me with pride knowing what our ancestors did during some very difficult times. And it's important to remember what we did with the language. And so what we did with the language was during a time when the United States and various states were encroaching on our tribal lands and threatening our resources and taking a dim view of us as people of the world, we fought back, and we fought back with that revolution of thought that Sequoia sparked, and it enabled us to talk among our people using our Cherokee Phoenix newspaper, which is the oldest newspaper in Indian country. It allowed us to communicate with our people about what was going on in our world and the larger world. That's a way to educate each other about the events of the day. Translating that into English, particularly in the Cherokee Phoenix, allowed us to also communicate to the world. So newspaper, the Cherokee Phoenix newspaper, ends up in cities all over the country and even in other parts of the world. And suddenly people start to realize what is happening to the Cherokee people.
Voice coming forward really strong in, you know, again, we got to put it in context of these times. So interesting. A lot more to learn about the Cherokee syllabary. Stay tuned. Join us too. Call in 1-800-996-2848.
Fry bread, bannock, kneel down bread, piki bread, and pueblo bread are among the varieties that have become staples for tribes. Some breads are part of ceremonies, others are a part of everyday meals. What native breads are a part of your tribe's food culture? We're getting a special taste of native bread on the next Native America Calling.
Jessa jata lokte sti hi a ju de ti sa ti. Ita te ge se sti jata to I to hi ge sa na I ga u da ge ti je ha gu wa hi da sti. Tala no he ta ni e wia u ye la ni da na de ga an ik se sti ski. Naski you get Stella at healthcare.gov or 1-800-318-2596. He are get to know Medicare, Hale, Medicaid, Unadalka.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are learning about the Cherokee syllabary today. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we've got Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. on the show with us right now, and he is telling us more about the 200th anniversary of the Cherokee syllabary. Principal Chief, I know you got to get going here, but I definitely wanted to give you a moment to go ahead and finish your thoughts and anything else you want to leave us with when it comes to celebrating the Cherokee syllabary.
Well, first, thanks for Native American Calling and your show for highlighting this important event, not only for Cherokee Nation, but I think for all of Indian country. But the revolution of thought that Sequoia sparked in the 19th century, allowing us to communicate within our tribe and to the rest of the world, translating the Cherokee Phoenix into English, allowed us to stand our ground. I think that was a moment of great strength for the Cherokee people. It allowed us to survive the hardships of removal. It allowed us, I think, to rebuild because of the strength that we had. And that strength still carries with us today. And so the power of the written language, I think, is very much evident in Cherokee people today. And we've got to keep it alive. And this celebration is one way to do that. And I thank you again.
Well, our best to you and the nation as you celebrate your culture and things that ancestors have passed down. One particular one who brought us the syllabary. Thank you for that. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr., thank you for joining us. And that invitation is there for you too. You can go ahead and give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. We now move to Tahlequah, Oklahoma, to say hello to Roy Boney Jr. He is the manager of the Cherokee Language Program at the Cherokee Nation, and Roy is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Roy, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Yes, Sio Nagad, Kani Kolha, Dagwadoa, Galialiga, Gedoa, Kohi. My name is Roy Boney Jr., and I'm glad to be here today.
And Roy, we just heard from Principal Chief and his thoughts on this, and your take, the syllabary, what does it mean to you, and how big of a role has it played in your understanding of being a Cherokee person?
Well, the syllabary is a huge cultural identifier. You know, I grew up in a Cherokee-speaking home with lots of Cherokee-speaking family members, and my generation is a generation where that break occurred. So, like, for me, I'm not fluent, and I'm learning Cherokee. And so when you see the syllabary itself, you know, I think there's a lot of division among Cherokees about different things, but when you see the syllabary, that's a unifier for everyone. Everyone identifies that as that's ours, and we all share that. And so with it being tied to the language, which is, you know, a big part of our culture and it holds so much knowledge, you know, I think that's a really great symbol that, you know, Sequoia made a great tool, but it's also a symbol now that keeps us all together.
And so give us a little bit of an explanation as to exactly what it is. You could call it letters, but I think it's more than that. Explain a little bit about what it looks like and how it works.
Yeah, well, the idea of a syllabary is it's composed of sounds. As opposed to an alphabet, which has, you know, consonant and vowels, syllables are a combination of a consonant and vowel sound, like the ka sound or ha or he or something like that. So it's like a combination vowel and consonant. We also have our own vowels in the Cherokee as well. So it's an interesting mix of vowels and syllables. And so basically it is a collection of sounds. So even in Cherokee, you know, we refer to syllabary as sounds at Junayulka, talking about, and these are the sounds of our language. So a lot of people like to call it an alphabet, but technically it's not an alphabet.
And describe a little bit of how those symbols came to be, or, you know, just the history of them.
Yeah, well, Sequoia, as you mentioned, invented the syllabary, and he worked many years on it. Roughly in 1809, he had started working on it after seeing white men write letters home. So he kind of thought, if they can do this, why can't our people do this? So he set out to create a writing system. And he came up with various iterations of it. Some at first, he initially is recorded that he tried to create a sound for every word, which was, you know, impossible because there's so many words in the language or in any language to do that. So he moved on from that, and there are reports that we had like several hundred characters, and it finally got whittled down to 86. And even beyond that, too, there are some oral traditions that say Sequoia was working from a previous writing system that existed, but that was lost. So it's not been 100% verified, but there are oral stories of that too. So from 1809 to 1821, he worked on this project and refined it and got it to a point where he could teach it to others. And at that point is when, as you mentioned in the introduction to the episode, that some members of the community accused him of witchcraft and other nefarious things. So they decided to put him to the test, and they made him demonstrate the writing system. So they got his daughter. He wrote messages to her. They separated them out, and they communicated back and forth, writing these messages down on paper. And so when the Cherokee saw that, they realized, well, this is something that really is viable, so we need to adopt this immediately.
And so there it was. It took off. And Chief Huskin talked about its use with the Cherokee Phoenix. And we know about it in journalism circles, and just imagining how far back they were telling Native stories or reporting on what was going on is just fascinating to us journalism nerds. But just thinking of the Native word getting out, Native news, way back then because of this, what are your thoughts on that, Roy?
Yeah, well, I like to think of it, you know, I mentioned 1821 is when he finalized it. So there's a period from 1821 to 1828 in which the community was using it, writing letters, making signage. You know, there are historical records talking about road signs and stuff for like hotels and restaurants and things. So it was actively used in the communities. But it wasn't until late 1827 when we got a printing press actually brought into the Cherokee Nation. So that paved the way in 1828 for the first issue of the Cherokee Phoenix. So the writing system had to evolve from more of a cursive script handwriting to the printing press. So, you know, as I like to point out, we've always adapted our writing for technology ever since then. So at that time, a printing press was the main, you know, mass communication technology at the time. So the Cherokee Nation saw, you know, they saw fit to use this new tool, the writing that the Cherokee celebrated, and adapt it to the printing press so they could get the word out about Cherokees. And that started, you know, Native American journalism. So it's truly a milestone among not just for Cherokee people, but for all types of indigenous languages.
And so, Roy, being able to understand it and use it is, understand, gifted down to you. And to think you're using this today, what do you think about that? Do you get fascinated with it? You know, is there pride when you make those symbols and know you're communicating?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it is, you know, 200 years now. And being a part of that continuation, it provides a big sense of pride. And as I mentioned, you know, every form of writing technology, we've adapted to it. So we went from the printing press. We even had, you know, so legal shorthand in Silverberry. We've got all types of typewriters, from manual to electric to, you know, moving to the digital age with word processing and fonts and texting and everything. So every time there's a major development in writing, writing tools, we've adapted our writing system to it. So now, as, you know, someone living in the contemporary era, you know, being able to use my writing system on a phone to text my friends or my coworkers, you know, it's quite amazing, actually. And it is really neat to think about how far it's come from, you know, Sequoia writing it on, you know, pieces of bark to now where you can see it on your iPhone or Android device.
The new form of bark, huh?
Yeah.
And celebrating this individual, I think, you know, we learn more about just history. And with that, tell us more about who Sequoia was.
Well, Sequoia, he was Cherokee. You know, his father was, they say he was a white trader. His name was Nathaniel Gist, or Guest, as it's sometimes written. So Sequoia's English name is George Guest. And, you know, he famously had a lame leg. So there are stories about how, you know, he, because of his immobility, he had a lot of time to sit around and, you know, think deep thoughts and things. So he was a silversmith, an artist, and I believe those skills, those creative skills, kind of helped him form this idea of, you know, what would writing look like? You know, it's in the modern era now, we have, you know, professional typographers who study letter forms, and that's an art form to itself. So Sequoia was one of the very first, you know, Native typographers and designers. So I like to think of him applying that knowledge to what he made. And beyond that, after he invented the writing system, he became, you know, a really well-renowned statesman for Cherokee people. He represented Cherokees in various delegations to D.C., the people in the communities that respected him. He went back and forth between the Eastern and Western Cherokees as a diplomat. So he had a huge impact on Cherokee people.
And still, it is there today. And that's where you come in. Maybe you are from the Cherokee Nation. You have some words to share about the syllabary. Go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe your tribe has its own type of written version of the language. How is it used? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And with these kind of symbols and the ability to communicate on paper, that probably also means books written in tribal language. If you want to share some thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. Maybe you know about the Cherokee Phoenix and have read it in Cherokee. You want to share some thoughts? 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. And Roy, you mentioned sending texts and communicating using the syllabary. It has come a long way, including right there, toe-to-toe with modern technology. Tell me about how some of it is being used. And, you know, you can get to a typewriter and you can type out things in Cherokee. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Chief Hoskin mentioned Durbin Feeling, who passed away last year. And he had the foresight to see this new technology coming. So back in the mid-1990s, he actually worked with some experts to help digitize the Cherokee language, and he made an application to the Unicode Consortium, which is an international standards body that governs how writing systems are used on computing systems. So he started that process way back then, and now, you know, jumping forward, you know, almost three decades later, we have this on texting, and we can blog, you know, using Instagram, just any kind of any place you can write in Cherokee now, whether that's on a blog, Instagram, Facebook, or if you're on an iPhone, an Android, a laptop, every major digital device now has the Cherokee language as part of its system. So on an international scale, anyone could just load it up on their computer and use it. It's because it's by default, it's on the system. So, you know, we've made huge progress in that sense that everyone should have access to it on their devices now.
And so can you send text faster in Cherokee than you can in English?
Sometimes, like I said, I'm still learning some words, so some words I know better than others, but yeah, I can type faster a lot of times in Cherokee than I can in English, and it's interesting to watch my phone try to autocorrect some of these. You
know, so. Oh, boy. Can only imagine. You're going to have to send me a screenshot of that. That sounds pretty interesting. And Roy, what about just thinking of the language through, you know, the written form? And what is that like? And of course, trying to translate what I'm saying, what you're hearing, into symbols on a paper. There's things that happen there. Tell me a little bit more about really putting this into play and thinking about these words, what they mean, what they open up when we say them, and then thinking about them in the written form. Anything more you want to share on that?
Yeah, well, I have the privilege of working with several master-level Cherokee speakers who are professional translators. And so, you know, we often get requests to translate different words and things. So you heard in the break the Cherokee message about the healthcare systems and things. You know, those come from our translators at Cherokee Nation. And so they get together and they talk about new ideas and new words. And obviously this is all spoken in Cherokee, but then they come to the point where they do have to write it down. So they're, you know, they're transferring their thoughts, you know, of what they're trying to convey to a writing system. And the syllabary has its issues in the sense that sometimes, you know, just like any kind of natural speaking, there you might drop letter sounds and things. Like in English, you might drop off the G at the end of a word, you know, and kind of informal speech. Cherokee is very similar. So when you're writing syllabary, there are sounds in it that are written down that aren't pronounced. So you have to be really skilled in, you know, the language to understand what you're writing. So for a lot of us learners, sometimes that comes up as a challenge. But it is fascinating to watch that transfer of knowledge from the spoken form to the written form. And, you know, we see it typed quite a lot, like on laptops and phones and things, but it's also nice. Some of our elders have very nice handwriting. It's beautiful to see that script on paper as well still.
And where are some of the places that you've seen citizens take the syllabary, or places it showed up that you never imagined, and then you're like, okay, that makes sense. Other places where the syllabary has come up in common use. Go ahead, Roy.
Well, one thing I that kind of entertains me is if you travel, before pandemic, you know, and you go to an airport or something, and, you know, people would check in on social media saying, I'm here at this airport or whatever. Several airports in the United States and actually in different countries have their places marked in Cherokee syllabary. So some Cherokee has been there and they tagged it in Silverberry saying I was here. So I like seeing that appearing everywhere. And even platforms like Google Maps, if your phone or device has Cherokee as the primary language, some of those places appear as Cherokee on your maps. So if you're navigating using your map in your car, some of those areas will be labeled in the Cherokee syllabary. So that's always surprising to see that kind of thing. And it's jumped from computers now to even in car systems. You know, when you have the touch screen on some cars, you plug your phone into it, Cherokee syllabary shows up on that as well now. So it's getting everywhere, and it comes in unexpected places like that.
Wow. And what do you think Sequoia would have thought of all of this? We got about a minute. Go ahead.
I can only imagine he would be really surprised, but also very proud to see how far his invention had went. You know, his goal was for communication, so that's definitely still happening for it to appear in these new types of communication technologies.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you read about some of this when you were growing up and you're hearing how far this has come and you want to share some thoughts, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we are also talking about the language, and we know it's important. More about it coming up after the break. Join us. Phone lines are open. And you're tuned in here to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we're going to continue our conversation about language, its importance, how far it needs to go. And maybe this has inspired you, too, to think about other ways to keep your language going. Have there been efforts in your own tribal nation to do something similar? We want to hear about it. Maybe you got questions. You want to talk with Roy, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls, your questions, and just ideas too. Maybe this is sparking another idea of how to keep your language strong in your own tribal nation. Go ahead and give us a ring. We look forward to hearing from you today. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you want to send us a tweet, you can also do that at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Phone lines are open.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, who have been providing scholarships and other support to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Scholarship applications for the upcoming school year are being accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Application deadline is May 31st.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we're glad that you are tuned in to our conversation today about the Cherokee syllabary, and maybe you write in your tribal language too. And you got some thoughts for us, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And here with us today out of Tahlequah, Oklahoma, is Roy Boney Jr. He is the manager of the Cherokee Language Program at the Cherokee Nation, and he's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Our pleasure to have him here. And Roy, you know what? The calls are coming in. Again, if you want to join us, dial now. Last chance to do it. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to say hi to Michael, who is in Jemez Springs, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Michael, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. Your thoughts. You're on air.
All right. Thank you for taking my call. My sister is married to Charles. Charles' dad is a full Cherokee. He passed away recently. And at the funeral, Al belonged to the Cherokee Club in Albuquerque, and a member, a good friend of his, came and did the eulogy in the Cherokee Nation. And this is the first time my sister ever heard the Cherokee Nation. She was so intrigued, and she said that it was a really beautiful language. And also in Albuquerque, you hear in the news reports, you hear of the Navajo Nation doing a lot of their billboards in the Navajo language because of COVID, you know, to spread whatever updates are. And also when I was at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, I took Navajo 1. It was was written at the time, and it suffices as a foreign language requirement. And right now, like in the, there's all kinds of series on TVs, and one of them was the old Death Valley Days, and there was a one on Sequoia, and everything that history about Sequoia was in that little short episode of called Sequoia, and everything sparked my mind to wonder. And also, I went to school with some Cherokees up in Fort Lewis College.
And Michael, what do you think? And you think of your own language, you know how it's spoken, you know how it sounds, and thinking about if there was a way to communicate on paper in Hemesh, any thoughts about that?
Oh yeah, Toa language. My father and then my mother is Karis from Acoma, and I listened to both really intent. I always had a good ear for language, and when I went to school in St. Catharines in Santa Fe, there was many other tribes there, mostly Pueblos, and I really was intrigued when they spoke to each other in their language. Well, you know, when you're young, you ask, well, how do you say this? What does this mean? And a lot of that sticks with you. And then also, I was writing, you know English, so you try to think of how you would write your own language in the English ways. You know, there's some languages that are like the Navajo. If you look at the Navajo language, it looks really foreign, almost like an Oriental. But like with Toa and Karis, it seems you can pretty much write it in English if you just sound out the words.
Well, Michael, thanks for calling in. Think out loud with us too by dialing in 1-800-996-2848. Also in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, is Jacob Chavez, and he joins us today. He's a student of language in the Master Apprentice Program at the Cherokee Nation, and Jacob is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Jacob, our pleasure to have you here. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jacob. I'm from Tahlequah. I also just like to give a shout out to you guys in the Southwest. My grandpa was from San Felipe, Will Chavez Sr.
Oh, there you go. Well, connections are made. And with that, Jacob, you spoke the beautiful language of your nation, one of your nations. And just knowing that this language is still alive and there's people who are listening right now who knew exactly what you were saying, any thoughts about just celebrating where we are and how far the language has come?
Well, that's a loaded question for sure. But to start with myself, I guess I should say that my grandma, she's a fluent speaker from Marble City, Oklahoma. And my dad, I guess it's what he would call a passive speaker. He understands a lot of the language, but he can't produce any of it. And then there's me, and I grew up in a household without it. But the language itself, you know, it's definitely making a comeback here in these recent, 20 years or so. People have fought even longer before that to keep it around, and the syllabary itself has been a crucial tool for that.
And so you're learning it too, and through the Master Apprentice Program. Tell me a little bit about that and your use of the syllabary.
Okay. There's a few different parts of the program, because we break it up into different classes, and I'm not sure how many classes they're looking to fill now. It used to be a first-year program and a second-year program, but now they've started to implement more space for us to create more classrooms. And my class is about 8 people, and we range from different ages, and we all have different experiences with language. Some of us came in knowing a fair amount, given our background, and some of us came in not knowing anything. So we've all kind of, you know, started from scratch and sort of started climbing our way. And we've been in almost 6 months or so. And we don't use syllabary all too much. Some of us, like I said, you know, with no experience, but have slowly started to kind of teach themselves. And I've been able to use syllabary. I was fortunate enough to have a Cherokee class in my high school, Sequoia High School here in Tahlequah. And I was taught by Jim Carey. He's a fluent speaker from Hobart. And but I've been able to use that since I was in high school, and but it's definitely helped me learn the language in some aspects. But sometimes it's kind of it can be confusing for people who don't understand it completely, and it is kind of tricky down to when you break it down to like a language level, as far as translations and how to conjugate different verbs or different actions and word changes and things of that nature. But our class works to kind of just make sure comprehension a lot more than writing, I guess.
And so, Jacob, what does a language mean to you? What does it mean to you to be speaking or either writing or just understanding this language that dates back to your history, your tribe's history, your tribe's beginning? Go ahead.
It's definitely the core of the Cherokee people, because without it, you lose a lot of the context of anything else, especially as far as culture. You might have the syllabary might be written somewhere on instructions how to play a game, like stickball, one of our cultural games, and you might understand that word for word, but sometimes within those words are the true meanings and like the kind of history and the story of like why we play a game that way or why we do a ceremony that way. Like the words themselves are very descriptive, and Cherokee is a very descriptive language. And so if you lose the language portion of it, you just have a bunch of words that you might understand, you might have translated, but you don't really have the same weight. You don't have that culture, that real sense of like connection, because that language identifies us as Cherokee people. And so when we lose that, everything else will kind of follow, I think. And so this is why we have programs like this, like the immersion school and this adult program for us. And that's why everyone who's involved has just poured their heart into it. And it's just a big commitment for us all.
And Jacob, that's a really important point. It's more than symbols. It's more than sounds. And these words, they come alive. Roy, anything to add to that?
Well, as you know, Jacob would say, and the breakdowns of the words can get really fascinating in what the true meanings are. And you know, we have Cherokee speakers who act as linguists for us, who can tell us a word, and they'll actively tell us what the root really means and how this works. And it is very descriptive, and it can get very complicated very fast. And I sometimes that's a barrier to learning it, but also it shows how for us as Cherokees, our people are very intellectual. This language, the people that speak it, it's so intense and in depth. It reveals a huge, intellectual prowess to be able to speak it. So, hearing our fluent speakers talk about that is really fascinating.
And when we talk about learning, it comes with challenges. And Jacob, what are some of the challenges that you're proud to say you've overcome in learning the language, or challenges that you're building up to overcome as well? Go ahead. Tell me a little bit about that.
I think one of the biggest challenges I've had to overcome, and sometimes I still struggle with, is just comparing my skill level with other people who are second language learners, I guess. There's a lot of pride involved, I guess, in being able to speak, especially if you come from a Cherokee family, a Cherokee-speaking family. And so sometimes there can be a lot of anxiety, I guess, to want to perform well and to want to be able to produce the correct language. And so I think the biggest challenge, was just struggling to kind of make my own way. Because like you said, everybody kind of struggles their own way. Everybody has their own obstacles. And so I think that's probably one of the bigger ones, is that I just struggle with really taking my time and knowing the fact and understanding the fact that I will get there someday. It's just that we all have our own speed, and sometimes it just takes longer.
And what kind of conversations go on with young people about learning the language? Is this something they feel is a priority? Tell me more.
I would say to the youth, there is a lot of desire, I guess you could say. I wouldn't say that I have a specific number in my head or a good guess of like how many, but I don't really. Due to this pandemic, I've been kind of disconnected from anyone about having conversations like that, so I couldn't really tell you. But I would like to believe that there are families out there who don't want to lose it like me, and there are people who have lost that connection and want it back. And so they scramble themselves to pick up everything they can. And so I think it will, you know, it goes throughout all ages. Even people who are in their 50s who understand and want to learn more, you know, and you're never too young to kind of commit to it.
Mm-hmm. And I know people come to language learning at all ages, and that is a very true point. And when we think of the syllabary that's being celebrated, 200 years of it, and Jacob, when you see it somewhere on a sign around your nation, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel, you know, welcome for sure. It makes me feel comfortable knowing that, you know, this is somewhere where Cherokees are. And then on the other side of the coin is that the people who live in this community who aren't Native or aren't Cherokee get to kind of experience that, you know, like, we live here among, because this is where the capital is located, the Italiqua, so we get to kind of share that with our community and to be a part of our community, and so they get to kind of take part in that without really sometimes even knowing what we really are about. And so I think that's kind of nice to kind of have that around and kind of, you know, a staple in the community for everybody to have to notice almost.
Mm-hmm. And how much further would you like to see this syllabary being used? Places, you know, that you'd love to see it appear?
Yeah, I mean, I've had friends, like Roy was saying, like we text and stuff. I use it on my phone too when I can. But I mean, I've had friends who have ideas to put it in, you know, our local Walmart or supermarkets and stores and stuff. And I'd love to have it on TV or something that's subtitled eventually one day or something, or, you know, label makers in Cherokee and things of that. I mean, we have a bunch of stuff that we've made that kind of compares to that, but, you know, it can keep going further, like billboards and what have you, and it could be everywhere, advertising.
My, and, you know, just hearing too from Roy, from some of the places he's seen it used, it's pretty interesting. And Roy, for you, what kind of future do you see for the Cherokee syllabary?
Well, I hope to see it used more on a daily basis. You know, like a program like the Master Apprentice Program is creating some, you know, new speakers out of it. You know, for decades we had, you know, first language speakers, but very few new speakers being created were second language speakers or learners. So with this new generation of speakers that, you know, the program is helping to develop, you know, I hope, you know, they kind of sort of act as like evangelists, as it were, to go out and convince other people to learn it too and use it. And this, I'd like to start seeing the syllabary everywhere. You know, like here in Tahlequah, you can see it on some street signs in certain areas of town. You'll see it at the travel complexes, on some of the signage, you know, things like that. Yeah, there's like the post office has in Cherokee, and so one of the banks does too. And so, you know, those have been there for a long time, but I'd like to see it, like if you went to a restaurant, like you'd say there might be a menu in Cherokee, you know, that I hope someday to reach that point where it's just so common, where it's just everywhere.
What about casting your ballot for the President of the United States? What do you think of that one?
That'd be really neat to see that, you know, see ballots and things like that in Cherokee. Now, a lot of our laws are translated into Cherokee sometimes, not all the time, but historically all of them were. So maybe at some point it'd be nice to get back to that too, to get all our laws and legislation and everything like that translated into Cherokee.
Very interesting. And Roy, is there any place that people want to find out about some of the celebrations that are going on, how the syllabary is being celebrated this year? Is there a place they can go to learn more?
Yeah, probably the best source is the Cherokee Nation social media. So we the tribe has a Facebook page, a Twitter account, and I believe there's an Instagram, just any kind of social media they have. They have a cultural tourism arm, too, that will be promoting a lot of this because they operate our museums. So many of these events will be coming through them. And for other Cherokee language items, including the celebrations and other materials or just news, you can go to language.cherokee.org. That's our official language website from Cherokee Nation.
Okay. And Roy, you want to send us off with some Cherokee words? Go ahead.
I just want to say, Gordo and Edis Quada. So thank you, and that's all we're done.
All right, thank you for that. And with that, we're going to wrap up our hour celebration of the Cherokee syllabary. And thank you to everybody we heard from, our guests, Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr., Roy Boney Jr., and Jacob Chavez. And we're wrapping up the week tomorrow with a conversation about bread in Native America. We'll be talking Bannock, Peaky, Kneel Down, just to name a few. We hope you'll make plans to join us, tell us the story of how they originated in your tribe, and how they are revered today. We're talking bread. We hope you'll talk about it with us tomorrow. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today here on Native America Calling. And if you'd like to learn more about our program or what we have planned during the week or the following week, you can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can even sign up for the newsletter, where that information will be sent to you each Friday. Thanks again. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea, working to fully restore Bears Ears National Monument by asking the Biden administration to fulfill the original vision of protection for 1.9 million acres with meaningful co-management by tribes. It's time we respect ancestral lands and our collective American heritage by listening to and learning from tribes on stewardships of these cultural landscapes. Info on supporting this effort at utahdene.org. That's UTAHDINE.org.
Bonjour, je wein in de zon oschki bebung, gana wein dan gede gene minno manji oyen. Gano jen o kid in a shinabe akwazi wigamigung na waj jige kain de man, ma wadishu wein healthcare.gov, game aganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gaun din agadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.